Tonight is part two in our series called Road Trip. We are talking about how to deal with what comes next. As we move on down the road in this year, in our walk, in our faith, in our understanding of Scripture, who God is, who we are, on that road trip that we're taking together. This year has been tagged the year of Odyssey. An odyssey is an adventure, it is a journey, it is a trip that is taken, that reveals new things, that causes you to gain wisdom in the process, and draw closer to a goal, and that's what we're doing. So, getting ready for what is coming down the road next, that's what we're talking about. The next thing moving toward you, or you're moving toward on that road. So, because everybody, whether you're trying or not, whether you believe it or not, everybody is headed somewhere. I mean, ultimately, infinitely, you are headed to a destination, one of two. So you are headed somewhere. So the question is, what's next for you? Some of us know what's next. Some of us don't quite know what's next yet. But if you're one of those people that you know what's coming next, maybe there's a plan that you've put in motion, and or there's something that you can clearly see what is coming next. But a common misconception we make is just because you know what's next doesn't mean you're prepared for it. And that, I think, is one of the first things on your sheet tonight. Just because you know, number one, just because you know what's next doesn't mean you're prepared for what's next. An example, most couples, young couples who are getting married, they'll spend more time preparing their wedding day than they'll prepare for their marriage, right? We're going to look at a Bible verse tonight that will help us prepare and make better decisions as we move on down the road. We're going to do what I love to do and take one verse and just squeeze it, because that's fun. We have had Bible studies where we'll spend the whole night and get through one verse. Those are great. Those are great. And we're going to talk about how to make those better decisions moving down the road and preparing for what's ahead, because we all know people, we all know really smart people who have made really bad decisions. You know, maybe you're one of them. I certainly am. I know that. We're going to talk about that, because we can look at other people. We can look at other people's lives and watch them make decisions, and we can stand back and predict how those decisions are going to end. We do that, don't we? We watch people, and they're doing something, or they've decided they're going this direction, and we can predict that it isn't going to end well. And guess what? Then it doesn't end well, because we could see it coming. And we look at them, and we say, how in the world did you not see that coming? How did you not see the lights on the dash flashing, warning? How did you not see that? Because you saw it. It was clear to you, right? And you look at them and you say, how didn't you figure that out? How did you not see that up there? That you were going to just crash right into that and it's just going to be a disaster for you. How did you not see that? And they'll say, well, you know, I guess I kind of did, because my mom said this to me, or my dad, or my friend told me this, but I just ignored it. I just thought that it would be okay. I just thought that it would just, you know, like it does magically, just go in with the flow, and it'll just magically work out. And then it didn't. None of us are immune to that kind of thinking. I mean, we've all done it. I think the scary part is that if you have that attitude and that kind of thinking in a situation, and it's one that you just narrowly escape disaster, but it works out, you get in the dangerous habit of thinking you can do it again and it's still going to be okay. And so you kind of develop that habit, and that's a wrong habit to have, because more often than not, it's not going to end well for you. So, what can we do to prevent a breakdown on our trip as we move on down the road? breakdowns, disasters. We're going to look at Proverbs. One verse in the book of Proverbs, chapter 27, verse 12. You can turn there. I'll have it up on the board. But we're going to look at two kinds of people and one similar circumstance that has two different responses from those two different people and gives two different results from those two different responses. So, let's see what Solomon, the writer of this, has to say. Solomon, wisest man that ever lived, who wasn't wise enough to take his own advice, which is, I mean, that's a Bible study in itself. But if he would have just heeded his own words and done what he said, what he told other people to do, what he wrote down, if he would have followed that, his life wouldn't have ended the way it did. It would have been a lot better off for him. So, number two on your sheet. It is not knowing that makes a difference, it's doing that makes the change. And this, again, is something that Solomon learned through experience. He was wise. I mean, you can read the book of Ecclesiastes. That's a whole deal in itself. Ecclesiastes is Solomon doing all the things he's telling other people not to do to see how it turns out. And in the end, he does gain some experience points on that. And he comes back full circle to the only thing that satisfies and brings wisdom in life is God. So, again, number two, it's not knowing that makes a difference, it's doing that makes the change. You can know it, but if you don't apply it, it's pointless, right? It's like paint. If you buy paint, it's only good if you apply it. Otherwise, it's making no change. It just sits there in the bucket. So, Proverbs 27, verse 12, we'll kick that off. And the first couple of words say, the prudent. Here he goes, squeezing this verse to death. The prudent. Prudent. What's prudent mean? It's not a shrunken plum. That's a prune. No, okay. Prudent. Prudent is they're wise people. Prudent is someone who's wise, someone who sees that life is connected. Someone who knows that what I do today will affect tomorrow. They understand that preparing now helps avoid stuff down the road. What you do now makes a big difference. Prudent people are good at connecting the dots. They say things like, in light of my future hopes and dreams, in light of where I want to go, what is the wisest thing for me to do now to get me there? That's a prudent person. So, next little bit of that verse. The prudent see danger. Here's the human truth when it comes to what we see. This is number three on your sheet. We see what we are looking for, and we hear what we are listening for. What do I mean by that? Well, we've talked about it before. We, a lot of times, have already decided what we believe is correct, what's right, what's true. And when we look at the world, when we look at life, when we look down the road, we will only see what agrees with our particular worldview, our perspective. Right? We have a lot of times already decided what we believe, and everything we see and everything we hear is filtered through so that it only helps us to support what we believe. Here's an example of someone who is a bit deluded in that fashion. This is a clip from Dumb and Dumber. So, right? Huh? Roll them!
What do you think the chances are of a guy like you and a girl like me ending up together?
Well, Lloyd, that's difficult to say. We really don't...
Hit me with it! Just give it to me straight. I came a long way just to see you, Mary. Just least you can do is level with me. What are my chances?
Not good.
You mean not good like 1 out of 100?
I'd say more like 1 out of 1,000,000.
So you're telling me there's a chance? Yeah!
Oh, man. That is so true, right? They see what they want to see. There are people like that. The technical term for that is confirmation bias. What confirmation bias is that in all that we see and all that we hear and all the information that we glean, we search that information for stuff that confirms what is our truth. And we sift out only the stuff that helps to support our side, and we ignore the rest of it. And it's called confirmation bias. So, this is what separates the prudent from the wise. This is what shows maturity, being able to do that, being able to look at it and separate out those things truthfully, accurately. And this is the thing that most people miss, truthfully. I mean, it's just the state of us as humans. Number four, the prudent person will admit what they don't want to see. The prudent person will admit what they don't want to see. If there's stuff out there that just crushes your truth or just, you know, hurts what you've thought you believed, they look at it, they accept it. And again, scripturally, this is what in the New Testament the Bereans were commended for looking into this whole Jesus thing. To check it out, check the information, investigate it for yourself. And they did, honestly. Scripture says, check it out for yourself. Look it over. See for yourself if this is true or not. And they did, and they found it to be true. And it changed their minds in a different direction. They became followers. So, it's hard to do that. Once the prudent person sees something they don't want to see or something they don't want to hear, they will respond truthfully. That's what Solomon's talking about. Let's look at the next bit of that passage. The prudent see danger and take refuge. What's he talking about there? The Hebrew word for refuge used here is safar. And it has the sense that there's an army and they send a scout out ahead down the road. That scout sees danger, sees trouble, comes back, reports it, and the army takes that information and they prepare defensively for it. They do something. Or if you're a traveler on the road and you're traveling and you see danger up ahead, you take another path to avoid it. You take action to prevent that danger from colliding with you. They don't ignore what's ahead. They don't pretend it's going to be fine. They do something about it. Now, here's the contrast, the comparison, which Proverbs does. The situation, same thing, different person, different response. The next part of that passage. But the simple. Who are the simple? That is not a compliment. That does not mean you're living the simple life. This is simple-minded. This is you're a simpleton. This is something you don't aspire to be simple. This is not a good thing. It means that you are foolish, you are gullible, you are naive, that you're dull of mind. You're simple. But those people who lack wisdom, they respond differently. These are the people who don't think life is connected. They don't see it. They're living now and not worrying about tomorrow. Well, Pastor, Jesus said, don't worry about tomorrow, I'll take care of you. Well, okay. That's another knot we can untie. But they are those who don't connect the present to the future. They don't care, they don't see it, whether they have severe confirmation bias or if they actually just don't see it. If they're just not paying attention, they're the person that believes, well, whatever I do today, when the sun sets, then it's going to be yesterday, and it doesn't matter anymore. It doesn't count. And they just move on. And they're just leaving, in reality, as we look at it, they're just leaving a trail of wrecks behind them as they move on down the road. So someone will try to grab onto these people, try to talk to them, try to help them, try to say, hey, what in the world are you doing with your life? And these are the people who say, well, it's just fine. My life is fine. There's not a problem. Nothing's going to happen. I'll be fine. That thing down there, not worried about it one bit. I'll cross that bridge when I come to it. They have all kinds of handy-dandy things they say that are actually just simple, right? So, is this verse saying that the simple see the danger and don't do anything about it? Or maybe it's saying they don't see it at all, and it really doesn't matter because the result is the same, whether they ignore it or don't see it at all. The result is the same. Maybe you've sat down with someone in your life, sat down with a friend or a relative or a loved one, and you look at them and you say, if you keep drinking like that, if you keep spending like that, if you keep gambling like that, if you keep seeing her, if you keep meeting with him, if you keep doing that, if you keep going down that road, this is what's going to happen. And it's so clear to you. You see it. You see it. Other people see it. And they'll listen to your words. And then they'll walk away, just like we talked about last week, like they looked in a mirror and forgot. They'll just walk away because tomorrow doesn't matter. It's just today. And they don't see what you see. You give good advice. You give good advice to people. We've all done it. Me as a pastor. One of the most frustrating things for me as a pastor has been counseling, which is supposed to be one of the big parts, right? But, again, in seminary, they never prepare you for that. It's amazing how they gave you all kinds of Bible knowledge, but they really lacked on giving you practical knowledge on how to work with people. So you just had to figure that out. But most counseling sessions I've ever done, they don't listen. I'll sit there and we'll start it off. And what's funny is, and again, I don't say this to, hurt anybody's feelings or anything, but it's curious. Most of the counseling I've done is marriage counseling, which kind of goes without saying. That seems to be the problem more people have than any other. But most of the marriage counseling that I've done has actually been with Catholics, Catholic couples, which I guess makes sense because I don't know how much, marriage advice you'd get from a priest. I don't know. I'm guessing I could give better advice than him, but they'll look at me like I have two heads. I'll say, this is what we're doing. This is the counseling. It's going to be biblically based, scriptural, and this isn't my opinion. This is what the Bible says, and here's some practical things we can do. And then they don't. Trying to give them prudent advice. You look at them, you give them good advice. You say, don't buy that, and they buy it anyway. Don't rent that apartment, but they'll rent it anyway. Don't drink that. They don't eat that. Don't date that. Don't marry that, and they do. And it ends in disaster. And you can just kind of stand back and shake your head. Let's look at the next part of that verse. But the simple keep going. They keep going. Even after all that, even after you've shown them, you have told them what's down the road. The red light is on the dashboard, and it has been for 50 miles. Friends are telling them. Relatives are telling them. All the signs, warning, warning. And they're just oblivious, and they are heading on down the road. They just keep going. Contrary to popular belief, number 5 on your sheet, number 5, there is a point of no return. When you do these things, there is a point of no return. Understand, it is not a point of no forgiveness. That's a whole different thing. But there is a point of no return when it comes to experiencing the results of your actions, the consequences of your choices. And again, this isn't... there comes that point where you're flying down the road and suddenly you do see it, but you're moving way too fast to slow down and avoid it. The best you can do is brace yourself for impact, right? It's going to happen. It's coming. I had an experience like that with a pastor friend of mine. I suppose I can tell this story. You guys know Pastor Paul and Mary Hankins. They've been here and preached and sang before. She's the gal who sounds like Amy Grant. But... he was up here once with my other buddy, Russ. I don't know if you know Russ Bishop. Yep, we're trying desperately to get him to move up here, so let's move in that direction. We were having a guy's night, so we were headed to Rhinelander to go see a movie. I don't even remember what it was. We were going to the, what's the theater downtown? Not the Roman Theater, but the other one, the State, the old one. Yeah. So we're headed there to see a movie. Oh, the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. That's what it was, because we were a League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. Not so much this night, though. No, because he was in one of his friends. He borrowed their conversion van for the trip so he could be comfortable, and it's nice with the, you know, the swiveling captain seats in the back, and it was all carpeted, and the little raised part in the back, and the fender skirts, and, you know, something from the 70s or something. It was pretty sweet. So he's cruising along in this thing. It's dark. We're heading on 17 going to Rhinelander, and we're chatting away, and Russ and I look out the windshield, and we're like, Paul, you better slow down. There's a deer in the road. And he, like Scripture says, like the simple, he just kept going. And Russ and I are just watching this, and we're like, he's not slowing down. We told him that he can even see it. It's right there in the middle of the road. And I kid you not, he just rolled on right up to it, and boom, just hit the thing. And we're looking at each other, how could you hit that? How could you not see it? We told you. Why did you not slow down? Why did you not, you know, something, but nothing. And he looked at us with a straight face, and he said, I thought it would move out of the way. I thought it would be fine. It's like, oh my gosh, thank you for the illustration. I'll be preaching you later. Oh my gosh. Wrecked the whole front end of his friend's van. It was a pretty sweet night for us, so we don't let him forget that. You can't escape choices when you've crossed that line. There is a point of no return where you've gone so far that there's nothing you can do to avoid the impact. It's going to happen. But we're stubborn, and we block out all the stuff we don't want to hear. We block out all the stuff we don't want to see, and we do it anyway. We go too far. Kayaking, White River kayaking, if you've ever done that. I have not, because I don't have a desire to, so that's probably why I don't. Some things I don't do simply because I am not going to do them. But from what I hear, White River kayaking, on some of the rougher rivers, they'll have a spot where they'll have like a cable run across the river with signs on it that will say point of no return, or, you know, rocks ahead or waterfall ahead or whatever. And at that point, those are warnings to tell you you need to stop, you need to get out of the water and carry your kayak a little farther down past the trouble and then get back in, right? But there's always the hot shot who wants to do it, right? And understand, with kayaking, you can see the danger, the rock, the waterfall, the rapids, whatever it is, you can see it, and you try to plot your course as best you can, and you commit to that course, because you're moving. But there comes a time, even in that, when you've committed to a path, right or wrong, and the current is just going to take you there, and you've reached a point of no return. You're in it, right? And that's what happens to us. So, and this is true. This is true for us in our marriages, in our relationships, in our finances, in our health, in all these areas. Number six on your sheet, there is a time when you can change course. There is a time when you can change course. In that whole rapids scenario, usually when they have that cable saying danger ahead, it's usually in a place where the water is calm, purposely so that you can easily stop, get to the shore, and get out. And it's planned that way. And for us, if we, in that calm time, can see the danger ahead and can get out, that's prudent. When you take a wrong turn with your GPS, what does it say? Rerouting, rerouting, right? It sets up another route. You have escaped a potentially bad situation. There is a time when you can detour around, you can get out and walk around. Those times are available. But once you cross that, then you're committed to the impact. So, but there is that point, like I said, when you can't turn back. So, Solomon writes this passage for us to read, to learn about, and here's how this whole thing ends. Proverbs 27:12. But the simple keep going and pay the penalty. Pay the penalty. This isn't God punishing them for making poor decisions. They are punishing themselves by making poor decisions. This isn't God being mean or cruel. This is God already pointing out the trouble. And understand this. Once God has shown you the trouble down the road, when he's revealed this to you, now it's up to you, right? Now it's up to you to decide, am I going to be prudent or simple? Now that I know the trouble ahead. He's not punishing you. He's got better plans for you than a wreck. He loves you, and he's warned you. Now it's up to you. This is just the natural but avoidable consequence of us refusing or being unable to avoid what's ahead. So you can't blame God for this. This isn't his fault. This is just the natural course of events when you make bad choices. You follow me? So, number seven on your sheet, if you ignore something long enough, there are no good options left. If you ignore something long enough, there are no good options left. You have crossed the line. You are committed. You're in too deep. You're traveling way too fast, and putting on the brakes won't help anymore. You receive a foreclosure from the bank on your house. That is not the time to start making a budget. If you find yourself pregnant, that's no time to decide you need to evaluate your relationship with the other person involved. If you are lying in bed with the neighbor's wife, that is no time to start working on your marriage. You know what I'm saying? The line has been crossed. You are now living on the other side of your choice. You're now living the life that now exists on the other side of that line. You're already there. And you can't blame God for that. The prudent see danger and do something. The simple, keep going. I want you to see something, again, relating to Jesus. That's what this is all about. Number eight on your sheet. Prudent people evaluate relationships based on where they're headed. Prudent people evaluate relationships based on where they are headed. This, in the broad sense, in the most important sense, has to do with your relationship with Christ, right? Smart, wise, prudent people understand that their relationship with Jesus is or isn't going to take them someplace. Right? You're going somewhere. Where do you want to go? Do you want to go to hell or do you want to go to heaven? Prudent people evaluate the relationships based on where they're headed. I would like to be, my future hopes and dreams, everlasting life with the King of the universe. So, with that in mind, what's the wisest thing to do now? So I have to evaluate my relationship with Jesus wisely, correct? All relationships are headed somewhere, all of them. Relationship with your kids is headed somewhere. Lots of people have bad relationships with their kids, but those relationships are headed somewhere. The relationship with your spouse, relationships with, if you're dating, with a boyfriend, with a girlfriend, they're all going somewhere. Where is it going? And how should I plan to respond? How should I plan to adjust course to get that relationship to the place where I want it to be? To steer it prudently so that I can end up safely where I want to be. And again, with Jesus also, where do you want to end up? Number nine, but, again, the other side, but naive people evaluate relationships based on where they are now. Naive people evaluate those relationships based on where they are now. Think about atheists. Think about non-believers. Think about people who are just clueless. They live as though life is not connected. They live as though I can do whatever I want today, and when the sun sets, I'm good. I can just do something stupid again tomorrow. Doesn't matter. But But that's not true. We've talked about that, that the things you do today in the present become your past, which will show up in your future down the road and ruin you. But simple people don't make the connection. They don't do it. You think about people who are in relationships that are bad relationships. You know, like he drinks too much, she drinks too much, or he cheats, or she cheats, or he's a liar, or she's a liar, or he's abusive. But then they'll say things like, but he just told me he loves me. So in that moment, it's fine, it's okay. Even though the disaster down the road is clear where this relationship is going, they're only evaluating right now. And that's not a good idea. Proverbs 27:12, in its entirety. The prudent see danger and take refuge. But the simple keep going and pay the penalty. And this should scare us. This should worry us. This should make you nervous. Nobody's immune. There is something next down the road. And just because you know what's next doesn't mean you're prepared for it. So, how do I prepare for what's down the road? One of the best ways to prepare for what's down the road is to live as though your life is connected. Because it is. Start thinking about that. Live as though it's connected. What does that mean? Well, it means your life is a series of choices. It's like a roadmap. You're traveling down a road. You're on your life trip going down the road, and the turns you make determine where you end up, don't they? It's connected. You can't be headed for Texas and for the last 10 years be making all turns that are taking you to Maine and then wake up and go, well, I wanted to be in Texas. Well, you didn't do anything to get to Texas. You know what I'm saying? So you've got to live as though life is connected. It is. Your decisions, series of them connected together, will take you someplace. Today does affect tomorrow. And when we see something, when we hear something, we have to do something about that. Number 10, four words that will help you live a prudent life, that'll help you get there. Some application stuff. The first one is the word action. Action, because you have to do something. And again, this is a tough one. A lot of people, when I started talking like this, didn't, I don't know if they agreed with me or liked me very much, but you know, it's something that Scripture shows, that there's a time for praying and there's a time for getting up off your knees and doing something. Because God wants us to be involved in the answer to our prayer. So we can't live our life just hoping that God's going to do everything for us like he's some great cosmic butler, right? So, action. You have to do something, not just hope for something, not just hope for the best. Just put the pedal to the metal, Harold, and we'll just hope for the best. Nope, that's not going to work. Not even just praying for something. And again, this is where people misconstrue what I'm saying. I'm not saying don't pray. I'm not saying praying isn't important. Oh my gosh, conversation with the God of the universe is vital. It's required. But there is another step. You pray. You ask God for what you want. You tell him where you'd like to be. You explain to him the situation. Not that he doesn't know, but he likes talking to you. So you do all that. You pray. And then when you're done, you have to get up and do what? Take another step. You got to trust him, and you've got to start moving forward. You've got to start doing something. So action is key. Once God has revealed that danger, the next step is yours. So you can do something prudent or something simple. The next word is the word sacrifice. Sacrifice. Maybe that means where you're headed, the place you want to go down the road, maybe it means you might have to end some relationships. I remember when I first got saved, when I first accepted Christ, I was working at a place, you all know about this, it was a residential treatment care facility for emotionally disturbed and abused kids. It was a group home where I was a senior counselor there, and was trying to fix kids that were severely broken. And these were kids, this was the last resort, the place where I worked. We all often joked it was built over the gates of hell, because it was. You went to work, worked an eight-hour shift trying not to get beat up by these kids. Hit with chairs. I was bit, punched, glasses broken, strangled, scratched, come at with shards of glass, the whole thing. And they actually trained us in non-violent techniques to wrestle these kids to the ground and control them. We actually had guys come in and teach us, like, wrestling moves. Me and this other guy, Jim was his name, we were like a tag team. When one of these big kids would go off, start exploding, we would come in from two sides, and we'd have to get the kid and wrestle him to the ground. And so the nurse would come and give him a shot and knock him out, or they'd put leather restraints on him. I mean, it was crazy. There was kids there that, they were the product of parents, situations. You're going somewhere. And you have to make a sacrifice. That might mean you have to break a relationship. And when I got saved, after work, we would go down and, unwind at the bar. Drink beer, play pool, shoot darts, whatever. Just talk trash about the day. And that's what you did. But when I got saved, I didn't want to do that anymore. And they didn't understand why. And they started looking at you funny. But I knew, I'm not going their direction anymore. I have now chosen to go here. So on my map, there's a T in the road, and I'm going this direction now. And I had to sacrifice those relationships to go the direction I wanted to go to get where I wanted to be. Does that make sense? That might mean relationships. That might mean a reputation. Because again, people aren't going to understand your choices. And they're going to talk trash about you. And it might cost you resources. It might cost you something. It might cost you money. It might cost you time. It might cost you effort, sweat, equity to get there. The third word is misunderstood. That's the wife of Mr. Understood. That's a joke there. All right. You can laugh. People will not understand why you do what you do as a Christian. They're not going to understand where you're going, why you live like you live, why you're doing the things you do, why you act the way you act. They're not going to get it. They're not going to understand. You are going to be misunderstood. You're going to be misrepresented. You will be. Know that. Understand it ahead of time. You're not responding to what's here and now like they are. You're responding to something they don't see that's way down the road. So you're doing something that in your mind is clear. I need to do this now to avoid that. All they're doing is going, wow, why is he doing that weird thing now? They don't understand it. So you're misunderstood. Number four, the fourth word is relief. Relief. That's the feeling you get when you start to live prudently. No one regrets taking refuge. No one regrets avoiding danger or responding wisely. You won't regret that. You will feel relief from that. So, when you're thinking about what's next, what's down the road, ask yourself, are there any red flags? Do you see any lights on the dash that have come on? Maybe it's that new job offer. The pay sounds really good, but the work environment's really iffy and you're not really sure. Don't ignore the warning signs. If it's a financial deal, an investment thing, someone who comes to you and says, have I got a deal for you? And you're kind of, don't ignore the warning signs in things like that. If it's your kid's behavior, if you're a little unsure or you see red flags in your kid's friends, these, again, are things you need to address. Your own habits and your own behavior. And we are our own worst enemy in this, because we will see it and know it. And again, confirmation bias, we'll just shove it behind us and go on ahead. So, ask ourselves, is there something that you are desperately trying to not see, to not hear? Because there is a danger ahead. And now is the time to do something about that. A life connected where you do something now is going to make later better for you.